Every sport has their big, juicy controversy. Boxing has the Mike Tyson ear bite. Cycling has Lance Armstrong. Baseball has its steroid era. Curling has Broomgate. It's a story of broken relationships, houses divided, corporate rivalry, and a performance-enhancing broom.
It was a year I'd like to forget.
Broomgate, available now.
The beautiful thing about having a left-hander like Dickerson now, like, we can match up better. You know what I'm saying? Like, if a tough left is coming in and Grichuk's on the bench, he can pinch it for Dickerson, or the other way around. And that's something that we haven't had. And that's what Dickerson does for us now. Gives us that good left-handed bat.
Well, there you go. The breaking news, I guess we want to call it that, out of the Blue Jays camp ahead of tonight's game against the Cleveland Indians, Kevin Barker, is that Kevin Biggio has gone on the IL with a backslash neck injury. And Corey Dickerson, as we mentioned yesterday, has been activated off the IL. Corey Dickerson acquired along with Adam Simber in a deal with the Marlins. He has been rehabbing at AAA Buffalo, or wherever the hell AAA Buffalo was playing, Trenton, Buffalo, wherever it was. But he's been activated, and that was manager Charlie Montoyo talking about the potential impact of that left-handed bat in the lineup. I mean, look, I guess operating under the assumption that Kevin Biggio is hurt, and we know that he did miss time with a neck-slash-back injury earlier this year, how do you envision Corey Dickerson fitting into this team?
I think exactly like the way Charlie said. He'll play a little left. He'll play a little right occasionally. He'll pinch hit when a tough righty comes in. And late in games, you know, everybody's talking about that late and close thing. Well, maybe Corey Dickerson can come off and hit a breaking ball, lay off a slider, get something out over the plate, stay in the big part of the field. He's done it in the American League East before. He's done it down the stretch. Look, is he a be-all, end-all to this team? Probably not, but he gives them a different option. He gives another team a different look. That's the whole point of this thing, is the right-handed dominant lineup for the Toronto Blue Jays, especially late and close, hard throwers, hard right-handed throwers who like the slider, who can elevate the heater. Maybe you can't do that so much if they bring in Corey Dickerson. And, you know, Corey is sometimes occasionally got the short little compact swing when he does. Ball jumps off his bat, and that's what they're hoping for, I think, down the stretch here, just to give another team a different look.
7:07 will be the first pitch tonight from the Rogers Center. It'll be Hyunjin Ryu against Zach Plesac. Ben Wagner will have the call of the game. And, of course, as always, it will be on Sportsnet. Cleveland beat the Blue Jays 5-2 in 10 innings in the opener of their four-game series yesterday. Bark, that means the Jays are now 2-6 in extra inning games. They're 7-15 in games decided in the final at-bat. And that type of loss, and I mean, there to me, there's two talking points out of that particular game. We'll talk about Robbie Ray later. But the two talking points for me are, one, Brad Hand coming in with the runner on second.
What's the other
one? The other one is something that a lot of folks have been talking about lately, and that is, and Charlie Montoyo was asked about it yesterday, and that is the Blue Jays' issues in late and close situations. Mm-hmm. So I know you've got some thoughts on late and close situations. I kind of danced around it yesterday in the post game show. But let's talk first and foremost about Brad Hand. Look, Brad Hand is not the Brad Hand of a couple of years ago. He has had a lot of appearances this year for the Washington Nationals. You can look at analytics. You can talk to people. I think Pete Walker, John Schneider, Charlie Montoyo, they kind of need to see on their own what Brad Hand can give them, when they can use him. I mean, that was not great yesterday, but I think that goes down in your memory bank.
For me, they got to get 90 wins. That means they got to win 36 more games. They can only lose 23 more games. If you got a guy that edge percentage, now that's a little bit of a different stat, but when you throw 92 or 93, you know, not 95, 96, and you're left-handed, and you're supposed to be doing these things late in games, and you know, it's the heart rate goes a little bit up, especially when you don't have your stuff. He's not the Brad Hand of 3 or 4 years ago. And that's, I think, what they're trying to figure out. And again, the leash for me has to be shorter. When you're not hitting your spots, you're giving up big key hits when it matters. That means your opportunity to get the ball when it matters goes down a little bit more, and you give the ball to somebody else. That's for me, I think, a little bit more of what you're seeing. But again, the track record's there. Can he make adjustments arm side? Can he be a little bit better glove side? You know, can he attack into a righty, go away with the slider? That's the big thing. Is the more he throws of it, the better he throws with the fastball, the better location of it, the more on the edges. I mentioned this to you yesterday, not inner third, mm-hmm. down the middle. That down the middle at 92 being left-handed to a Jose Ramirez, you know where that's going? In the seats. And that's where he's got to stay out of, especially late in games. And again, they're not going to continue to give him the ball, because they know it's going to take 91.
That's what I said.
It's going to take 90 wins to make the playoffs.
That's what I said. They found out. I think they found out something about Brad Hand. I don't think Brad Hand, to me, I don't think Brad Hand is a guy you go to the score tied or with the lead. I don't, not in extra innings. And I understand, you know, the way the game was managed and the decisions that were made. I had no problem with that. I had no problem with him going with Brad Hand. But I think there's a process here of learning what your guy is all about. And I'm not saying Brad Hand's never going to – of course he's going to pitch again in the ninth inning at some point, or the tenth inning. He just will.
Yep.
He just will, because mm-hmm. of the way bullpens are used now. That is a fact. But, again, I think Charlie and the brain trust – they'll kind of figure out what they got. Look, I can tell you when they got Adam Simber, I know some of the guys were kind of going, you know, talking to people around the team, they're looking at his numbers now. Yeah, he doesn't give up a lot of home runs, but man, how's that going to play in this division? Yada, yada. Adam Simber had to prove to them.
Well, you had to change minds. You get people out.
Exactly. You get people out. Then that'll change a manager's mind right away.
Well, you can't give up bombs in the 10th inning.
Exactly.
Yeah,
so,
that's what
Anyhow, that's where we are at that. We got to talk about, like, this is something that came up a couple of weeks ago. Somebody had tweeted that the Blue Jays late and close were historically bad. And I went and looked up the numbers. And I mean, depending on where you looked, they were either second last in baseball or third last with Houston behind them. Houston Astros, by the way, pretty good team. So, yeah, of course, it's like anything else. Over 162 games is a different narrative. And then yesterday, one of the questions Charlie was asked after the game about his young guys and close and late. I got to ask you about this because there's a couple of things. I think here's kind of the groundwork. When you're close and late,
mm-hmm.
you are going to be seeing velocity.
Seventh inning on,
you're going to be seeing velocity.
Big time.
More often than not, you're going to see right-handed velocity.
There you go.
Okay. Now, people are going to say, well, wait a minute, Jeff. And I'm saying the Jays lineup is right-handed. And you're going to say, okay, Jeff, but all those right-handers are pretty damn good. Bo, Flatty, Teoscar, George Springer. Those are pretty good right-handed hitters. And they handle velocity earlier in the game. Why can't they handle it now? You talked me through something about that. And I want you just to focus on what you think of that argument, because you made a very good point. I think there's an element of luck here. I can see people rolling their eyes. But let's look at this. First of all, close and late, the Jays OPS is not good. Their batting average is kind of like 23rd, something like that.
Yeah.
Slugging is, they're in the bottom third of it. I think the batting average may actually be a little closer to the middle, close and late. Okay, mm-hmm. That's fine. One thing I'm going to say, though, is one of the worst teams in baseball in that category, the Houston Astros. So just keep that in mind. But let's talk a little bit about close and late, because, well, just walk me through close and late at bats. So far, who's got the most close and late at
Randall Grichuk, he's hitting about a buck 70, a little over a buck 70 late and close. That stat. He's got somewhere right almost around 40 at bats. He's got the most at bats. That's not very good. You got,
but he would also not be the guy. If you could go to that lineup and go, that's a guy I want hitting and close and late. Randall will not be number one.
Yeah. On the flip side of that, George Springer's got 10 at bats late and close. That's another thing too. You're one of your better hitters is not coming up when it matters the most. That's what they're trying to do.
He's been hurt too.
Yeah. Now Marcus Semien's coming up. He's got about the same at bats as Randall Grichuk. He's hitting somewhere in the 240 range. But when Vladdy comes up, he's hitting well over 340, I think. Teoscar Hernandez is coming up. He's hitting somewhere around that.
But the catch with Vladdy is he has had the seventh most close and late at bats of the team. There's a bunch of guys. Kevin Biggio's had more than him, is he not?
It's a lot of luck. And you got to remember, too, they're facing some of the best arms when it comes to those situations. You look at Tampa Bay, how many arms they throw out there, how hard they throw, where they throw it from. The Yankees,
guys
where
yesterday.
They throw
look
it
at Emmanuel Clase yesterday.
Hard, exactly right. How hard they throw it from. You know, the Red Sox are bringing guys in that throw super hard and weird arm angles who are right-handed. It's a lot of that is, right, how many at-bats certain guys have in that situation, how clutch they are when they come up, who can hit velocity. You know, Randall Grichuk, if you're throwing it where he's swinging, he can hit velocity. But a lot of the times they don't throw it where he's swinging. When it matters, that's the situation. Mm-hmm. You want your best guys coming up in those biggest spots. And again, it is a lot of luck. It is, you know, you saw Vladdy coming up yesterday late in a situation with a guy that throws a bazillion miles an hour.
But he just missed that one pitch. Vladdy just missed
that. But he got out. That's the thing is, the stats, it doesn't matter if you just miss it or not.
But
did it work out for you? That's the whole situation of the late and close stat for me is a lot of luck. Who's coming up when it matters the most?
Now, there may be one guy where the experience kind of factors in here, and that might be Bo, right? Because you've mentioned Bo. You know, we talk about Bo making great adjustments in the third strike, strike approach,
The big leg kick late and close is a big deal, right? How hard they throw, they'll pitch him backwards with the slider kind of thing, being right-handed. You do it from different arm angles. Is that experience lack of it? Probably, right? It's can you shorten up? Can you think the other way early in counts? Are you trying to let the heartbeat take over? You're getting a little bigger. That may be a little bit of what you're seeing from sometimes Vladdy, sometimes Bo, you know, a little bit from Marcus Semien. When you have seen George Springer come up, he's doing a little bit of that too. You know, they're hanging their hat on guys that they're supposed to be hanging their hat on, but this just would tell you is the at-bats earlier in games matter that much more. First time through, they need to get better. Eli Morgan, in August, with one of the best lineups in baseball coming in, has a mid-7 ERA, can't have one runner in scoring position his entire outing on the road. I'm sorry you can't do that and expect to win. I know the guy coming in the 10th inning gave it up, but you got to take a step back and go, your lineup's got to step up against the guy you're supposed to be beating up. It's 89-91. Now, was the sequences good? You saw some sequences to right-handed hitters were elevated fastball in with a fastball slider away. Again, it's 88-91. That, you would think, a really good lineup would make an adjustment to get it down a little earlier. Don't expand. Don't take the good one, chase the bad one. That's what you see a lot with this team when they haven't faced a guy. And it's like Zach Plesac. They haven't faced him this year. He's got two pitches against righties, a four-seamer and a slider. How do you think it's going to look, Jeff? That's the thing here is we can say all of this late and close thing because that's the best arms you're going to face all day probably. But how do they do against the starter? First at bat, that thing, how the at-bats look. Are they staying inside the baseball? Are they using the entire field? When they get a good pitch to hit, are they hitting it or are they missing it? Those are the things for me you got to be looking at. And the more at-bats George gets late, this team's going to be better because of it.
Well, that's his reputation too.
It will. He'll get more hangers.
The starting lineup for the Cleveland Indians have not seen the Blue Jays lineup yet. The starting lineup for the Indians is Miles Straw in center field. That was a great play Miles Straw made yesterday, by the way. Miles Straw in center field. Ahmad Rosario is the shortstop. Jose Ramirez at third base. Franmil Reyes is the DH. Harold Ramirez in left field. Bobby Bradley at first base. Oscar Mercado in right. Roberto Perez behind the plate. Ernie Clement at second base. We already mentioned Zach Plesac pitching for Cleveland. For the Toronto Blue Jays, it will be Hyun-Jin Ryu. Robbie Ray yesterday. What did you make of his start?
Yeah, it's a couple starts in a row. He's gutted through it. A fastball command really wasn't there. The bite on the slider wasn't there early. You know, he had a couple of bases stolen against him in the third inning there from Straw leading off, right? He's a fast guy. He'll get some better jumps. He tried to use some changeups. It gets back to the fact of when you're not having runs scored for you, you're almost have to be perfect every time you go out. It's not the easiest thing. You being left-handed, you got two pitches. What do we expect from Robbie Ray? Do we expect perfection every single time out, or we take a step back and go, you know, it's two pitches, he's left-handed. Mm-hmm. He's working through a big league lineup, even though it is Cleveland. They're not the greatest lineup in the world, but if you make a bad pitch to them, they'll make you pay for it. You know, the walks, and he started to figure it out there after sort of the fourth inning, right? He was a little bit more, the command of the fastball was a little bit better. The elevation of the fastball was better. The slider had a little bit more bite to it. It's the entire part of the Blue Jays game has to come together. Like it's we said this, the Indians are not a great team. They're a decent team. The Blue Jays got to play better all around. It's controlling the running game. It's make plays defensively you're supposed to make. Your lineup can't let Eli Morgan in August make that lineup look the way it looked. It's, you know, he was exactly the way he's supposed to look in August. He went out and gave him a chance to win, and they didn't.
Yeah, I should mention, by the way, that Corey Dickerson apparently will make his debut tonight at DH. Breivik Valera will be at third base against the right-hander. So Breivik Valera will be starting instead of Santiago Espinal. Hyunjin Ryu on the mound. I might want my best defensive third baseman.
You would think so.
But anyhow.
Don't overthink it, maybe.
There you go. Ross Atkins, general manager of the Blue Jays, joins us, by the way, in a few minutes. And we'll take a look back at the trade deadline, a hectic trade deadline for the Blue Jays, to say the least. And maybe also talk a little bit about Nate Pearson and some other things.
Yeah.
Some other things involving the organization. Again, 7:07 is the first pitch tonight from the Rogers Center. Blue Jays and Cleveland Indians. The Indians 5-2 winners yesterday in 10 innings. You talked about Robbie Ray and sort of having to gut through these two starts. We are getting to that point where it is getting close to the dog days of August.
Yep.
My sense is you're probably going to see more of that from Robbie Ray. Did you notice anything? You know, we've talked about Robbie Ray and maximum effort and all that for a long time. Did you notice anything about the quality of his pitches?
No, I don't think so. How many pitches he's throwing per at bat? He had a 10-pitch at bat in the first inning. He had 2 7-pitch and 1 6-pitch at bat in the second inning. He had 39 pitches through two innings. That's what you're seeing. You got to work a little harder. Everybody knows now it's two pitches. Occasionally he'll throw the changeup. Occasionally he'll throw a get-me-over slow breaking ball, even in counts. That's the way he's using his changeup. Guys fouling off a bunch of fastballs up or that slider. He'll go to the changeup, that kind of thing. He's got to work through it. Element of surprise is not there anymore with him. It's max effort. I'm going to go in with it. I'm going to try and expand with the slider. And you're seeing some longer at-bats. Again, it's – well, I don't know what we expect from him. He's been really, really good. Has he been great? Probably not, but he's been really, really, really good. And most of the time he goes to the mound, when he gives the ball to the manager, they got a chance of winning the game, and that's all you can ask.
One of the things I saw yesterday, you made this point. I know we got a break. I think we got a break in a minute, right, to get Ross on. Let me make this point very quickly. You talked about it. DeMar LaHale, who is replacing Terry Francona as manager on an interim basis, and we certainly wish Tito all the best and want to see him back in the dugout. But they came out very aggressively yesterday. It was pretty clear that was the plan. Push the issue on the bases, try to take advantage of some things. That, you know, you're going to see a lot of that because people are going to look at September's schedule's pretty soft in a lot of ways for this team. They're going to be playing teams that are out of it. And those teams have nothing to lose, and they will be. I mean, there will be balls to the wall baseball. And a lot of guys that don't have, are playing for jobs next year. And I think they're going to see a lot of stuff out of teams
You can help that if you score a lot of runs. Your offense is your best part of your game. Your starting pitching is really good, too. Seems like your back end of your bullpen's getting better if they put the right guy in the right spot. But for me, the lineup's got to score more runs than two.
Yep.
That would help. They haven't controlled the running game all year. All of a sudden in August, they're going to start doing that.
They haven't really controlled the running game.
It's a little tougher to do that. You're asking a lot from your catchers who doesn't have the greatest of arms. How quickly they get the ball from the glove to the hands, not the greatest. They're set up because they go to the one knee, that kind of thing. They're just not geared up. They're more for let's frame it instead of controlling it. The guy on the mound's more worried about punching somebody out than he is.
And that's been the way going back for. That's been the way going back for a while. It's not something that just started this year.
Score more runs.
Yeah.
Make it easier on them.
Ross Atkins is general manager of the Toronto Blue Jays. He'll join us next. It's Baseball Central.
Every sport has their big, juicy controversy. Boxing has the Mike Tyson ear bite. Cycling has Lance Armstrong. Baseball has its steroid era. Curling has Broomgate. It's a story of broken relationships, houses divided, corporate rivalry, and a performance-enhancing broom.
It was a year I'd like to forget.
Broomgate, available now.
So you've heard Barker and myself talk a little bit lately about Aurelvis Martinez, a 19-year-old infielder. In the Blue Jays organization, they had a lot of teams ask about him at the trade deadline, unsuccessfully, as it turns out. And rightly so, I think, Barker. We've talked about Aurelvis Martinez a lot, and a lot of people in baseball like him. The Jays have just announced that he is being promoted from Dunedin to Vancouver. The Vancouver team still, I believe, playing in Ogden. Ogden, did you play there?
I did.
Is it Ogden, Utah? Am I right? Let me just see. No, they're playing at Hillsboro in Hillsboro.
But I
Oregon.
Did play in Ogden.
Yeah,
that's where I started my professional career.
So they're based out of Hillsboro, Oregon, Vancouver, because of COVID-19 issues. But there you go, Aurelvis Martinez being promoted. Won't be the last time we'll be saying that.
No, very athletic.
to say the least.
Yeah.
And that is he's certainly a name to keep an eye on if you are a Blue Jays fan. 7:07 tonight is the first pitch at the Rogers Center. Hyunjin Ryu on the mound for the Blue Jays. Zach Plesac, the nephew of Dan Plesac, on the mound for the Indians. He's 6-3 with an ERA of 4.26. Ryu, of course, 10-5 with an ERA of 3.26. It's going to be his first. It's one of the biggest free agent signings in club history, and this is going to be his first start at the Rogers Center in a Blue Jays uniform. As a result, obviously, of COVID-19. It'll be his first career start, as a matter of fact, as a Blue Jay.
That's unbelievable. Center. Really, isn't it?
Well, it kind of tells you.
It's unbelievable.
Tells you everything you need to know about where we are and where we have been with the pandemic, say the
Crazy.
Least. So 7:07, first pitch. We'll give you the Jays lineup as soon as we get it. We can tell you Breivik Valera is at third base. Corey Dickerson, who was just activated, is the DH tonight. And at this time, we are very pleased to be joined by the general manager of the Toronto Blue Jays, Ross Atkins. Ross, thank you so much for joining us. Welcome back to Toronto after the 18 months, I guess, wandering through the desert. Before we talk to you about the trade deadline, you know, when the deal was made for Adam Simber, a lot of the focus was on him. Corey Dickerson at the time was hurt. He's being activated today. He's going to play today. We may have kind of overlooked Corey Dickerson in this whole equation. Why was his inclusion important to you guys, and what do you think he can bring to this team?
Yeah, thanks. First of all, thanks for having me on, guys. Good to hear your voices and from Rogers Center and not Buffalo or Dunedin. It is very nice to be home. I can't even describe how good it feels and how much more natural it feels for our major league team to be in this city. So, yeah, thanks for having me on. On Corey, I mean, you know, the track record, the character, the teammate, excited about his outfield ability, and you know whether he's playing in left or right will also be an added compliment. And just having the left-handed hitter in our lineup is obviously valuable. So excited to see how he can help us.
What's the biggest difference you've noticed around this team in the couple of days they've been home?
It's their surroundings is the biggest difference. I mean, these guys, they were incredible when they were in Buffalo, when they were in Dunedin, on the road. They have always been a very upbeat and positive group and extremely professional. I think they have probably gotten an added boost of energy and not one that they needed. You know, the guys, they really did a good job of just staying focused on what they could control. And but the surroundings has added a big boost. It's not something that I ever thought you could really quantify or talk about, something as extremely significant of how important it is to have your home crowd cheering for you. You're they're professionals. You expect them to compete and do the best of their ability, regardless of who's saying we're behind you or not. But it is over time just, you know, exceptionally powerful, and not something in this world you're ever challenged to think about too much. And we just experienced it. So, you know, I think the energy they get from the fans and from being in this facility, you know, has been palpable for sure.
I'm going to let Bark in here in a minute, but it's funny because, you know, I would think of all the sports, with the exception perhaps of some of the quirks in different ballparks for hitters, et cetera, et cetera. I would think that home field advantage, it would be different than football, right? Or sports of, I was going to say emotion or flow. I'm not taking anything away from baseball, but I think we would assume that it would be a bigger deal in other sports. But just the comments some of the players made and seeing Charlie's reaction and Bo's reaction and Vladdy's reaction to that ceremony on Friday, that really just kind of reinforced that there really is such a thing as home field advantage.
If you think about it over time, right? So if every single time that you're getting a certain emotion from whether it be a visiting crowd or a home crowd, you are going to get some level of emotion, whether it's anxiety or excitement or just more desire to come through because of that level of energy that's coming at you. You know, on one night, sure, it is a very, very small thing that may bump you in one direction or another. But over the course of time, it really can be powerful. And that's one of the beautiful things about baseball.
Now, I know you guys just put Kevin on the IL. It's obvious that the league has made an adjustment to him. I was just wondering what you're seeing from afar with his approach and his swing.
On Kevin, you know, Kevin, I think he's been battling through the different aggravations and the injuries that he's had, you know, the pain throughout his thoracic spine and into his neck. I mean, as a rotational athlete, is not something you want to be dealing with. And really, not huge differences. I think they're subtle. I think there's been times that he's gotten away from his approach and it's subtle. Like I said, it's not anything drastic where you see him be maybe a little bit more aggressive, you know, at pitches out of the zone than what we've seen in the past. His swing looks relatively similar. He's tried to at different times use the whole field more, and at different times maybe rely a little bit more heavily on a pull side approach. But his swing, you know, it's not drastically different. But I do think, as you know, around ball and around bat, those subtle differences really matter. So he'll be back. He'll be back in a strong way. And the player that we saw last year, he's not that far off from it. It really is just a matter of a week or two of that really consistent, steady approach, seeing a lot of pitches and waiting for that mistake in the middle of the zone.
Ross, I'm sure you've been asked this question already, but the trade deadline was Friday. Obviously, you guys got Jose Berríos. We know you got Soria as well. You made other bullpen acquisitions earlier. How was this deadline? I heard Eric Neander being interviewed, and he said it was, you know, everybody says every year, well, the deadline was this, the deadline was that. He said, this was just crazy. Was it as crazy as, you know, you look at the number of trades that were made? Was it really that crazy from your point of view in terms of the amount of work involved, the amount of decisions that needed to be made?
I think it's really more, I don't want to speak for Eric,
right,
and independently of his comments, I think it was more the outcomes and the results. You know, it was unusual to see this level, to just like looking at the Chicago Cubs and their ability to trade all of the players that they did and get quality returns for all of them doesn't typically happen because the demand was higher. Mm-hmm. So I think the demand meant more players moving and more marquee players moving. And that means that the prices were higher. So, larger returns were occurring. And, in the end, we'll see, see the impacts of individual organizations, and we'll see the impacts on the market moving forward. But it was very exciting. It was an exciting week, an exciting couple of days for sure. I think in talking to players about it too, a lot of players were super excited about the movement and momentum, and representation of players were excited about it as well. So, we'll see. We'll see what it means moving forward.
One of the things, Ross, you've done is overhauled the bullpen on the fly. Two questions. One, how hard is that to juggle all those balls? And when you are doing that, I was trying to figure out, is there a process of looking at the bullpen and saying, okay, we need this guy, we need this guy, we need this type of guy? So that you don't get a certain pitcher at a certain time, and then you find out a 2 days later, geez, if we just waited, we could have got a guy who was a little better than him. It just seems to me that putting a bullpen together on a fly is just so hard.
Well, I think really, like anything else, is so dependent upon health. And we had some blows this year that were hard to overcome for a couple of months. Early on, our bullpen was very good. We had a diverse group contributing at different ways and sometimes picking one another up. And, one day it would be one individual in the eighth inning, and the next day an entirely different individual or set of individuals over the seventh, eighth, and ninth. So having options is key. Having depth there is key. We're going to continue to need it. We're going to need guys from within to really step up, whether that be Julian Merriweather getting healthy again, Nate Pearson could potentially factor in, the guys that we've seen in Salcedo and Snead recently stepping up. Maybe if our starters stay really healthy, one of our starters can help in the bullpen, and we're going to need all of that because other guys are going to have hiccups and other guys are going to have certain performance setbacks that will need contributions across all angles. As it relates to the deadline, you have to work hard just to know what the acquisition prices are, make sure that you've prepped out your ideal choice, and then work through where that you can marry that. We were in on at every level of the bullpen and wanted to make sure we understood how we could do that and not compromise our farm system too much. We obviously prioritized the starting pitcher. That will also impact our bullpen, as having another starting pitcher that goes deep into a game means that we can rely a little bit less heavily on those leveraged relievers earlier in a game.
You just mentioned Nate Pearson. How far along is he in his rehab?
He's 100% healthy. The ball is exploding out of his hands. We are exceptionally encouraged about where he is physically. And now it's just a matter of fundamentally execution, getting him to a place where he could be a major league option. And we'll need to see a couple, at least, a couple, probably more likely several AAA outings to start to factor him in and think about how he could potentially impact us.
How quick did the deal for Barrios come together?
It depends on how you say that deal, right? First, you have to do all the work on your farm system to understand what level each piece is in the equation and how it impacts your organization. Then you do the work on all of the starting pitchers and dig into them individually. So that takes weeks to do all of that. And then understanding what your alternatives are, and then thinking through or just understanding from the other team what they're looking for in return. And that piece of the equation was probably less than 3 days of understanding what the return was going to be. The back and forth with the Minnesota Twins was not something that transpired over a month. It was more something that transpired over several days. And they were just fine having Jose Barrios come back to their organization. So we knew there was going to be a premium that had to be paid.
What did you like so much about Brad Hand?
Well, Brad's great track record. We know the durability and where it comes from and why he's been durable. We know the competitor. He's not going to back down. He hasn't had his best year, and we're hopeful that the next month and a half or 2 months or hopefully three, there will be closer to the Brad Hand that we saw 2 years ago. So the velo has been there. The velo has been encouraging for us thus far. Finding the consistency around that slider will be key for whether or not he's helping us in the eighth or the ninth or contributing on another level.
You know, just before you came on, Ross, we've got a feed of the ballpark here, and they put up a graphic about George Springer's offensive production since the All-Star break. And I mean, there was like seven categories he was first in the team in. Now that we've seen him play now for I don't know how many games, he's back regularly. Tell me about your impressions of the impact he can have on the lineup when he is in the game. We understand the type of person he is, and clearly he's fit in very well in the clubhouse and very well sort of into the culture of this team. But in terms of his impact on the lineup, what have you seen, and what do you think could be the even longer-term impact?
It's so interesting with major league hitters. There's this debate that will forever exist in hitting. It's never going to be determined that it's better to be disciplined versus aggressive, passive versus aggressive. There is ongoing discussion about that. There will be forever because it's a mindset and it's different for every individual. I think George strikes that balance about as well as you can look to strike it, in that with his given talent and his ability, he has seemingly a very aggressive mindset to hit the ball hard and hit it a long way. And he's able to make decisions soon enough that he sees pitches as well. That's an incredible combination. I think, with Vladdy does it a little bit more naturally, inherently than most, just because of the bat speed, because of the vision. And George is exceptional that way in that he's looking to do damage. He's obviously very aggressive. You see early in the game, early in counts, first pitch home runs, but he sees the ball so early. So he's seeing a lot of pitches, and that is extremely tiring for opposing pitchers. And, that's kind of the gist of it, but just having, in my view, but having another threat like that, has the potential to not only hit a ball out of the park, but have a really good at bat with a man on second, or, thinking through the situation of the game and understanding the importance of plate discipline is a great compliment to our team.
Okay, Ross, me and Jeff have been talking about this stat, and there's been other people that talk about the late and close stat. The Blue Jays are at historic lows, seventh inning on, you're facing high velocity, they're right-handed. I just want to get your thoughts on what you think of that stat. Does it matter? You don't care? Is it not a big deal? Or are you worried about seventh inning on, better at bats, guys' velocity, that kind of thing?
Yeah, I mean, I will say this. I'm not going to sidestep it. It is something we need to be better with. There's no doubt about that. But what I will say is good hitters hit good pitching. And I have seen from time to time, last year, this year, our hitters handle some of the best pitchers in the game.
Yeah.
So velocity is not as much of a concern. Having elite right-handed relievers come in and face our lineup is less than ideal. We'd rather they be left-handed. But our hitters hit good pitching. So I think it's really going to come down to the strike zone and making sure that we're disciplined to it. I don't want to speak for our hitters, and I don't think that any of them are intimidated by any pitcher in the game. It's not the velo component as much that exposes us, as more the plate discipline and making sure that we stay within the zone.
Ross, really good of you to join us today. Thanks so much again. Welcome home.
Yeah.
It's great to chat with you, and I'll see you once I get down to the ballpark. We shall hook up for sure. Thanks for doing this, man.
Thanks, Ross.
All right, Jeff. Thanks, Kevin. See
Take
you guys
care.
Soon.
Ross Atkins, general manager of the Toronto Blue Jays. Love that answer.
Yeah, so it does matter. They have noticed late and close, the strike zone. That has, for me, the velocity thing. The harder they throw, the harder it is to recognize, let it travel a little bit longer. You hear Vladdy talk about that. Most human beings can't let 98 travel. You just can't do that.
Yeah, we sit there and say it.
I couldn't do that any. I had to basically take a imaginary plate and put it in front of the original plate to think about that's where my barrel, I'm trying to make contact there instead of making contact on the plate. Because if I make contact on the plate at 98, it's a foul ball. And you don't want to do that because if it's a foul ball, I'm swinging at it for a reason. I think it's a strike. I'm getting a good pitch to hit. I don't want to foul that off. So it's just it's a combination of a lot of things. I think it's velocity, it's luck, having the right guys up at the right time, and it is plate discipline. Mm-hmm. Being able to lay off that thing that's a borderline. Is it a strike? Is it a ball? Is that a pitcher's pitch? Is that something I can take to live to fight another pitch?
Yeah.
And there's only a few humans can do that. That's why these guys are pitching from the seventh inning on.
That's why, you know, when we were talking about it yesterday, I thought, I didn't necessarily have a great answer on the post game show because I've seen these guys hit. Well, I'll tell you what, I remember these guys hitting Aroldis Chapman.
Yeah,
you know, we have seen them. I'm not buying the argument that they quote unquote can't handle velocity. I think there was a time where we wondered if maybe some of the younger guys weren't overmatched. I still think Cavan maybe, but I don't know if that's as much how hard it's pitched. As where it's pitched.
Yeah.
But it's Marcus Semien, I was just reading a comment from Marcus Semien, said, you know, we spend a lot of time talking about the starting pitchers and studying starting pitchers.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we need to spend more time looking. And he was not ripping anybody,
yeah.
But he said, hey, maybe we got to spend more time looking at
simplified
at relievers late in the end.
It just seems like they don't simplify it enough. It's like pitchers they don't face a lot of, no matter how hard they throw. Eli yesterday was not mm-hmm. a hard thrower, somewhat located, carved them up a little bit. It just seems like you just go up, see ball, hit ball, look right down the middle until he makes you do something other than look right down the middle. And they're too good of a hitter to look the way they're looking sometimes, right? But you got to remember, too, the high velocity makes you do things that you normally don't want to do, which is chase.
Yep.
Get them in the strike zone, and it's very hard to do that. It's easy sitting on your couch going, why did he just swing at that? Well, it's followed up by something that he just threw that was 98-plus miles an hour. Mm-hmm. That's the reason why. And coming righty on righty, it's not the easiest thing to keep the front side in. The front shoulder in, think right center. Okay, you do it on 98. It's not the easiest thing to do.
No, it's definitely not. We will be joined by Jeff Passan at the top of the hour. Ben Wagner joins us as well. We'll take a break and come back. Talk a little more about some of the things Ross Atkins said. This is Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Every sport has their big, juicy controversy. Boxing has the Mike Tyson ear bite. Cycling has Lance Armstrong. Baseball has its steroid era. Curling has Broomgate. It's a story of broken relationships, houses divided, corporate rivalry, and a performance-enhancing broom.
It was a year I'd like to forget.
Broomgate, available now.
All right, Jeff Passan joins us in a few minutes. COVID-19 is becoming an issue around Major League Baseball again. We'll talk to Jeff about that. Gerrit Cole went on the COVID IL yesterday. Jordan Montgomery, Josh Hader's gone on it. Kevin Cash is worried about the numbers in Florida. We'll talk to Passan at 6 o'clock. The Jays go into tonight's game, 8 back of the division-leading Tampa Bay Rays. They're 4 out in the wild card spot. The Rays were handled rather easily, 8-2 by the Seattle Mariners. Seattle's going to be a pain in the ass the last 2 months. You know that?
Yeah.
They are.
They got nothing to lose.
Nah, they're 3 out of the wild card, 7.5 back in the division. They're closer to their division lead and closer to the wild card than the Blue Jays.
And they're thinking the GM don't have their back.
And they're thinking, yeah, they got a lot. Yeah.
They got a lot to prove.
Yeah, they're motivated by an immense dislike of their general manager. And the Baltimore Orioles beat the New York Yankees 7-1. I mean, that's one of the reasons I looked at that last night, and I'm thinking, man, oh, man, I mean, that might have been a little bit of a missed opportunity for the Blue Jays. I know you can't live day to day, but it would have been a chance to maybe pick up a game on the Yankees and Tampa Bay as well. So that's where we are. Tampa Bay 64-43. They lead the division. Boston 63-44. One back, three up on the wild card. Yankees, they are 7 back. 3 back in the wild card. Jays are 8 back in the division, 4 back in the wild card. And Detroit Tigers are kind of sniffing around. They're 9.5 back. They're not going to be any problem at all. Houston, 64-42. Oakland, 60-47. They're 4.5 back of their division, tied for the wild card. And we mentioned the Seattle Mariners, 57-50, 7.5 back of their division, 3 back of the wild card. This is the Blue Jays lineup for tonight. George Springer is leading off at center field. Vladdy Jr. is at first base. Marcus Semien is at second. Bo Bichette's at short. Teoscar Hernandez is in right field. Corey Dickerson is DHing. Lourdes Gurriel Jr. in left. Breivik Valera, the switch hitter at third base. Reese McGuire behind the plate. Hyunjin Ryu on the mound for the Blue Jays. We gave you Cleveland's lineup a little earlier. We will reset that in the second hour of the show. Again, 7:07 first pitch. Ben Wagner joining us from the broadcast booth at the bottom of the hour. Jeff Passan, ESPN's MLB insider, will be along. Some COVID-19 news we were talking about with Garrett Cole going on the IL, Jordan Montgomery. Aaron Boone saying today that Jordan Montgomery had a positive test. And Josh Hader of the Milwaukee Brewers. The numbers aren't great in the United States. You know about the Delta variant. You know about breakthrough COVID, where folks who have had the vaccination are testing positive. I mean, this is something, I'll tell you what, this is something that could be a competitive advantage or disadvantage going down the stretch for various major league teams. We'll talk to Passan about that next. It's Baseball Central in the home of the Blue Jays. Sportsnet 590, The Fan. .707 will be the first pitch tonight at the Rogers Center. Hyunjin Ryu on the mound for the Blue Jays, finally making his first start in a Blue Jays uniform in Toronto against Zach Plesac of the Cleveland Indians. The Indians 5-2 winners yesterday in the first game of the four-game series. And we have both lineups, and now we'll give them to you as we await. Jeff Passan will join us in a few minutes. The Jays lineup, we'll see George Springer leading off. Vladdy Jr. at first. Marcus Semien at second. Bo Bichette at short. Teoscar Hernandez in right. Corey Dickerson will make his Blue Jays debut as a designated hitter. Kevin Biggio has gone on the IL with a back and neck issue. Lourdes Gurriel Jr. is in left. Breivik Valera gets a start at third base tonight. Reese McGuire behind the plate. We already mentioned that Hyunjin Ryu is on the mound for the Toronto Blue Jays. And for the Cleveland Indians, it'll be Miles Straw, Ahmad Rosario. Jose Ramirez at third base. Franmil Reyes is the designated hitter. Harold Ramirez in left field. Bobby Bradley at first. Oscar Mercado in right. Roberto Perez behind the plate. Ernie Clement at second base, and as we mentioned, Zach Plesac, the nephew of Dan Plesac, on the mound for Cleveland. And again, 7:07 first pitch, Ben Wagner joins us from the broadcast booth at the bottom of the hour. I guess we're all guilty in some ways. Well, you're not guilty, Mr. Barker, but I guess we're all guilty in some ways of not forgetting about COVID-19, not necessarily overlooking it.
How can you forget every time you put the mask on your face?
Well, it's tough, I suppose. But here we are in August, what is it, August 5th, August 3rd. It'll be the 5th in 2 days. Therefore, it's the 3rd.
What?
Jesus. Can't buy that type of insight.
No,
and I'll tell you what. And they
That's
say
why you get paid the big bucks.
They say a BA from the University of Manitoba is not worth anything, right?
That.
What do they know? 6 years, six-year undergrad, and you can subtract five from three, whatever, three from five, and get two and put it together. My point is that COVID-19 has become, has reemerged as a bit of an issue around Major League Baseball. We saw Garrett Cole test positive, go on the IL. Aaron Boone, about 2 hours ago, saying that Jordan Montgomery has tested positive for COVID-19. Josh Hader of the Brewers, another player who has tested positive for COVID-19 lately. And Kevin Cash of the Tampa Bay Rays, you know, being really, really open a couple of days ago in a discussion with his team about the numbers going up in Tampa. The folks at the at Tropicana Field are now the people, you know, working in the stands, and that they've masked up again. And, you know, there appears to be, we've talked about breakthrough COVID. We've talked about the Delta variant. And again, the idea when you get vaccinated is it's not going to prevent you from getting the variant or from getting COVID-19. When you do get it, it's just going to mean that you're not going to die. But that doesn't mean you're not necessarily going to get it. As we get into the fall season and as things gradually open up, I think maybe we need to start, and I know we all want to move beyond COVID-19. I think maybe we need to, as baseball fans and as baseball people, start paying attention to this now, because this really does have has a potential to be a significant story for the next 2 months. Yep. Jeff Passan is ESPN's MLB insider, and he joins us on Baseball Central. Jeff, thanks so much for joining us today. Look, I'm not pressing the panic button here or anything, but I mean, I can tell you, I had a conversation with Mark Shapiro in the field this weekend, and Major League executives are all aware of this, aren't they? Like, it's the trade deadline was exciting a lot, but I think there's a little bit of, I don't know if disquiet's the word, but executives are aware of the potential here as things open up, aren't they?
I think they're not just aware of it, but I think Major League Baseball is at least going to have to explore the notion of a playoff bubble again. Mm. I don't think that at this point they're there yet, but they're certainly thinking about it. They're certainly talking about it. And mostly as a backup plan, because, mm-hmm. you know, we don't know the trajectory of this. We don't know if more people getting vaccinated here in the U.S. is going to help stem the tide. But it's at the point now where there's enough concern where MLB tends to be proactive with this sort of thing. And I think proactivity is the best antidote in this situation.
Now, we saw how much of an issue last year when baseball tried to restart after the pandemic, how much bargaining had to be done. Is it, again, you're right, we don't, you know, we're looking at this possibly as a backup plan here, but do you think a template exists, or does a template exist already with the Players Association and owners? Because I sure don't think we'd all want a public negotiation in the first week of September, or the second week of September, about a playoff bubble.
No, I don't think anybody wants that. But I think if they're being realistic about this, it has to at least be under consideration. And I think the fact that last year's went off as relatively smoothly as it did, it helps. It certainly, I think template is the right word to use here, because there is one. Like, it worked last year, and by the grace of God and, you know, the Los Angeles Dodgers being able to pull out a victory in game six, I mean, imagine what it would have been like if Justin Turner had tested positive, mm-hmm. and the Rays had won that game six. It would have been an absolute unmitigated disaster. And yeah. The baseball got extremely lucky, because you know that game seven would have been postponed at least for a day or two to do contact tracing. So I think they want to avoid that as much as they possibly can. And the only way to do that would be a playoff bubble if it comes to that.
Okay. Well, what would speed it up quicker? How many people are getting it, or who's getting it? Because you get Garrett Cole and Josh Hader, you know, I think have had their shots and they're starting to get it. Is it more the name, or is it how many people's getting it?
Yeah, I think it's probably more just how widespread it is. Yeah. And, you know, if you see teams starting to lose games and we get into a similar situation last year as we had with the Cardinals and the Marlins, then maybe it becomes a different situation. But as of now, there's nothing planned, but they're certainly going to be starting to talk about it.
It's the first time we've had you on since the trade deadline, and we were talking to Ross Atkins about this, and I mentioned him that I'd heard Eric Neander earlier today talk about the trade deadline on a podcast with our friend Jason Stark, and he was just talking about how active it was, and you know how it was.
It was ridiculous.
Yeah, you know, Ross was a little more understated, but Eric made it pretty clear that, you know, there was a lot going on. And he made this fascinating point I hadn't really thought of, because he was asked about, okay, you're making all these deals, you're walking and chewing gum at the same time, et cetera, et cetera. What's your biggest fear? And he said, you know, and Jason asked him, is your biggest fear overpaying? He said, no, your biggest fear is missing out on something you could have done. That's such a horrible way to live. But it's true, isn't it? I mean, that's a horrible way to live if you're a general manager. The idea that I might have missed out on getting this guy, but it seems like it really was a factor this year. Like, I'm getting the sense there was more sort of crosstalk. You know, this team's offering us this. What are you guys going to do? There was more of that this year than I think in any other season, from what I'm hearing.
There was a lot of that. And I mean, the Rays were involved with everyone. You know, the Rays were in on Kimbrel and Bryant, and they discussed Javier Baez, and the Jays were in on a lot of those guys too. And I think, you know, I think for contenders this year, they wanted to avoid going away empty-handed. I think mm-hmm. that was a big part of the calculus here, because with the number of impact players who wound up being dealt, if the Jays hadn't gotten a Jose Berríos or a Craig Kimbrel, I mean, it would have looked like, considering what so many of the other teams did, what so many of their division rivals did, would have looked like they weren't trying. And they were. I mean, they clearly were willing to try, because they paid a very hefty price to go and get Berríos. But that FOMO is an absolute real thing. And I think it drove the market to where it was, to the point where giving up players of Austin Martin and Simeon Woods Richardson's ilk was not just something that they had to consider, but was the reality of the market.
Yeah, speaking of trying, why is Trevor Story still a Rocky?
Because the Rockies are the Rockies.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's...
That's about it. he shouldn't be.
No.
Let's put it this way. I don't think that the Rockies are going to get a better player with their compensatory draft pick this upcoming offseason than Pete Crow Armstrong. Mm-hmm. And I think if the Rockies had gone to the Mets and said, we will give you Trevor Story and John Gray, the Mets would have preferred that to Javier Baez and Trevor Williams. And they were willing to give up for those two, Pete Crow Armstrong. So I don't get it. I don't get it because they have to pay Trevor Story $6 million for the rest of the season, because they have to pay John Gray a decent chunk of change for the rest of the season. And if you want to re-sign John Gray, that's perfectly fine. Do it in November. Like, do it after you have dealt him. I mean, if their fear was that they're not going to be able to re-sign John Gray, they know they're not going to be able to re-sign Trevor Story, but if their fear was that they're not going to be able to re-sign John Gray, and that is what gets in the way of making a deal, it is so short-sighted and so silly and so antithetical to running a baseball team the proper way in 2021 that I don't get it.
Jeff, how did the Cubs make out in your mind in their disassembling of that team? Like, you know, I love Barker kids me about this all the time, but I mean, I freely admit to having a crush on Nick Madrigal. I love watching him play.
Yeah.
I love watching him play.
Great, isn't it?
It really is. Because it makes me think that just about anybody can play baseball. I'm not taking that away from him, but it just kind of makes me think that because of his size. But they did pretty well. It seems, from what people are saying, that they actually did pretty well.
I'm writing something right now that's going to be up on ESPN.com tomorrow, sort of delving into what the Cubs did. And I'm not going to say they did as well as they possibly could have, because, you know, I don't know what the full extent and breadth of the trade opportunities there were. But I think if you look at the players that they got in all of their deals, it's a very nice mix of present day talent and future projection. And that's what you go for there. You got to get the poo-poo platter. You got to get a little bit of everything, because, you don't want to get too pitcher heavy. You don't want to get too hitter heavy. You don't want to get too upside heavy. You don't want to get too present value heavy. You want a mixture of all of those things. And I think the Cubs got that. And this is not to say that this is going to put them in contention in 2022. I think next year is going to be rough for them. But I think by the time 2023 comes around and some of their prospects have ascended through the organization, you know, they did really well in the Yu Darvish trade too. Owen Casey's been the best player out in the Arizona Complex League, and he's 18 years old and Canadian, in fact. He's going to be really – I don't know if you guys have seen the numbers he's putting up. He's hitting 373, he's getting on base, 550, slugging, high sixes. Like, he's been the best guy out there.
Yeah, staying in the National League with Chris Bryant, can the Giants win the World Series?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you think
so? You know, yeah, I mean, this bugs Giants fans when I say it. I still think the Dodgers are going to be a better team because I think they're a more talented team. But you can't discount what the Giants have done so far. You can't discount their pitching staff. You especially can't discount hitters. I mean, they've got a bunch of guys who are in double-digit home runs right now. They've got depth. They're good against righties. They're good against lefties. They out-homer their opponents by, you know, nearly 1.5 to 1. And if you're doing that in MLB, the difference between the homers they've hit and given up far and away the biggest in the big leagues. So they're playing really good baseball all year long. And I'm sorry, but you can't look at a team that's done through 110 or so games what the Giants have done and think anything but this team is legit.
Can San Diego survive if Fernando Tatis Jr. needs surgery on that shoulder? Can they? I mean, they've made a lot of moves. There's still some depth there, obviously. The lineup's still pretty good, but in your mind, can they make a run at the World Series without him?
I mean, right now Fernando Tatis Jr. is the MVP of the National League. So if you're losing a guy who's been the best player in the league so far for the season, it's going to put a significant damper on your plans. They need better pitching. Their pitching just has not, you know, Blake Snell's having a bad year. Mm-hmm. You know, Darvish has been a little inconsistent lately. You know, you can go into the postseason with the two of them and Joe Musgrove and feel good about your rotation. But I still think that there are enough flaws there where to bet on them over the Giants or the Dodgers at this point, or even the Milwaukee Brewers, who, by the way, in the month of July, their starters had a 2.4 ERA, and it wasn't like an accidental 2.4 ERA either. This was a sub-3 fielding independent pitching number as well, which means that they were brilliant all month long and really have been brilliant all season long. If you can go Burns, Woodruff and Freddie Peralta to start off, and whether you're choosing Adrian Hauser or Eric Lauer or Brett Anderson for that fourth spot, it's a really good rotation, and you back that up with Devin Williams in the seventh and eighth and Josh Hader in the eighth and ninth. Boy, I mean, that's, you know, we've seen Craig Counsell manage a team that has less pitching to the cusp of beating the Dodgers in a postseason series. I think this is the most talented team he's had since he's been there. And even if the Brewers offense isn't, you know, the standout of those other teams, their pitching is so good that I think they are every bit as much of a threat as the Padres at this point.
Okay, speaking of a threat, coming back to the American League here with the Blue Jays, the people that you talk to national-wide, how far do they think the Blue Jays are away of legitimately making a run at in the American League East?
I mean, I don't think they're going to make a run in the East this year. I think they're, you know, clawing for a wild card spot.
Yeah.
Boston's been playing poorly lately. They're going to be getting Chris Sale back though, and I don't think they're going to pitch as badly as they have. So I think that first wild card spot is probably going to be either the Red Sox or the Blue Jays. The Red Sox or the Rays. It's going to come down to three teams for that second wild card spot. And those three are the Oakland A's, the New York Yankees, and the Toronto Blue Jays. No disrespect to the Seattle Mariners. They've had a very good year. I just don't think that the talent is quite the same as those other three clubs. And I honestly think it's a coin flip at this point. I really like the Blue Jays. I think their offense is the best of those three. I think they're starting pitching with the way Robbie Ray's pitched this year, with Alek Manoah, with Berríos and Ryu is quite formidable. Their bullpen just scares the hell out of me. Mm-hmm. And it should, because it stunk this year. And the fact that they, you know, the fact that they didn't go out and get Kimbrel, I get it. But there is no team that he would have fit on better than the Toronto Blue Jays.
Yep. No, I think you're right about that.
Well said.
Jeff, thanks so much for doing this as always, man. Stay safe.
Thanks a lot.
Pleasure is always mine, gentlemen. You do the same.
Jeff Passan of ESPN.
I think he nailed it. Like it's...
Yeah, I think that's you know, you can't have everything. I mean, the only thing I would, well, it doesn't matter because Craig Kimbrel's under control for next year anyhow. So the point I was going to make was irrelevant. I wanted either or. My thinking all along was this is why I didn't buy into the whole Joey Gallo. I wanted Kimbrel or I wanted Berríos, and I'm happy. I was happy with either one. I really was. I think you gotta, as I said, the Jays were in a unique position at this deadline because almost everything they could do that would help them in the long term.
Yeah.
And by long term, I'm talking about next year, also immediately helped them in the short term. And that's, I wrote this in the weekend. I would not undersell this ownership or this front office's ability to re-sign Berríos. Understanding it's gonna butt up with Bo Bichette's timeline and Vladdy Jr.'s timeline.
Teoscar,
that I mean, we're talking Bo and Vladdy though are in a different level Teoscar, right? We're talking guys who I don't know if they're going to get Fernando Tatis money, but they'll probably ask for
close.
Or close to it.
Mm-hmm.
So I understand that all of this fits in, and it's going to require a considerable investment by ownership and management. But I wouldn't undersell the possibility of this guy re-signing here, and if he can re-sign, like you kind of rolled your eyes at me the other day. I still one game playoff, he's my guy.
Yeah, maybe.
One game playoff, he's my guy over Ray, over Ryu.
See a couple of starts of him against the Yankees, one against the Red Sox. Then you can talk to me. Yeah.
But I right now, if we have to, it's just sports talk radio. Right now, if we had to make a call, he would be the guy.
Yeah,
because you know what? I'll tell you what. I know I'd get a minimum 6 innings out of him, and I'd be competitive. And I don't know. Well, let's just wait and see
it would sure be nice to see Nate Pearson, a healthy Nate Pearson, come up here and in a 7th inning throw like he's mad at somebody.
It would be nice for Nate Pearson to come up here and pitch the way he pitched,
like he's mad at somebody
last year when he came up at the end. But that was one game. The game was essentially over. There wasn't a whole hell of a lot of pressure on him. But if he can come up and be a guy who can get it up to 101.
Me, I want to see Nate beating the guy on the on-deck circle. That's what I want to see. I've been a part of that. I've been a part of standing on the on-deck circle watching a guy throw and not wanting to peek out there at him because he's pretty good at it.
7:07 is the first pitch tonight. We can see Hyunjin Ryu in our monitor getting ready to go out and begin his warm-ups. We'll take a break when we come back. Ben Wagner joins us from the booth. This is Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. So how about this? You know that Jonathan Davis was put on waivers by the Toronto Blue Jays. Well, Jonathan Davis has a new major league team.
Who's that, Jeff?
It is the New York Yankees who claimed him off waivers today.
Who don't have a center fielder, really. They can play defense.
Well, they got Joey Gallo.
Who? He's going to play left and right.
Well, they got it. I mean,
that 45-year-old.
Anyhow. Jonathan Davis, he'll be able to go get it. He'll be able to go get it.
So there you go. On that team.
Jonathan Davis of the Yankees. Good for Jonathan Davis.
Yeah.
Good for Jonathan Davis. Always glad to win.
Good 0 for 10, though. It's going to be a little different going 0 for 10 in Toronto.
By the way, Tyler Chatwood was...
Who?
Tyler Chatwood was... today. So he gone. The Jays lineup for tonight, 7:07 first pitch. George Springer in center. Vladdy Jr. at first. Marcus Semien at second. Bo Bichette is the shortstop. Teoscar's in right. Corey Dickerson makes his Jays debut at DH. Lourdes Gurriel Jr. in left. Breivik Valera at third. Reese McGuire behind the plate. Mm. Mr. Barker, as you pointed out, three of the bottom four in this lineup are lefty hitters. Valera's a switch hitter. Been a while since we've seen
it. It has. Now, are they quality lefties? Huh? At least they're left-handed, and it makes the pitcher mix up sequences. You can't throw everybody exact same, get you out of groove. Yeah. That's the whole point.
And Dickerson's a guy that...
He can hit a homer.
He can hit a homer. I would argue that he probably makes the opposing manager, if you have him in the on-deck circle in the eighth or ninth inning of a game, the opposing manager probably thinks a little differently than
maybe
if you have Kevin Biggio.
Depends on how his first two at-bats go. He can tell you a lot how he's going to get you out. He's a free swinger. He's going to expand. But if he's zoned up, getting a heater, got some power.
Yeah. No, it's again, one of the reasons that the Jays got rid of Rowdy Tellez is because of Corey Dickerson. They knew they were going to have
and
that left-handed bat. That goes without saying.
He liked playing a lot, too.
Hey, the Astros are taking on the Dodgers tonight with fans in the stands. The first time since Cody Bellinger came out and basically said Altuve stole the MVP award from Aaron Judge and they stole the... Oh, no, they're not.
The Dodgers fans aren't over it.
No, Dodgers fans aren't over it. They're not over it. And Lance McCullers Jr. against Walker Buehler tonight. Two guys with a little bit. They get a little bit of the red ass, both of those guys.
I guess.
Lance McCullers will be...
Buehler's got an extra gear.
Yeah, they'll get a little bit of... There'll be a little bit of the nastiness going on there in that game, I think. And Dodgers fans, people don't realize it. People look at L.A. and think, it's L.A., it's boring. Dodgers fans can be are nutty.
Yeah, I want to see what Cody Bellinger, Trey Turner, and Mookie Betts, all healthy, all clicking at the same time looks like. That for me, with the Dodgers, with the three guys they got in their rotation, get Clayton Kershaw back, it's gonna be they're a pretty good team, is my point.
I think what does it say that even with all those injuries and even without Trevor Bauer, like nobody talks about Trevor Bauer anymore.
No.
And you're still thinking the Dodgers have a real good.
That's because they get healthy.
They got Max Scherzer.
They do. I still say who gets the ball when it matters. Seventh game of the World Series, who are you giving it to?
I mean,
it'd be hard pressed not to give it to the guys throwing tonight Dodgers.
He's got a gear.
Another one. Now, I know it's Max and the two different colored eyes and the things he brings, the first ballot Hall of Famer. But Walker Buehler, he's the one guy that can throw a fastball to a fastball hitter in a fastball count.
Yeah, I'm with you. I would probably,
that's just me.
Although I will say this, if you trade for Max Scherzer.
I guess.
Don't you? I'm not disagreeing with you. But if you trade for Max Scherzer. Here's
you
a way
to trade for him to get you to a game seven. That's what you trade for him.
Yeah, but if it's a wild card, let's say they don't win their
right.
If it's a wild card game,
all hands on deck.
But you almost have to start Max Scherzer. What if you are eliminated without Max Scherzer pitching in the game?
Oh, he's going to pitch in the game. It's just who starts the game.
But I think we're in agreement. It would be both of those guys before Clayton Kershaw.
I think so too.
Yeah, I think we're in agreement.
It's not even close.
We're in agreement with that. Ben Wagner is going to join us in a few minutes from the broadcast booth. Do we need to scoot now? Beautiful. We will break now and come back. Ben Wagner joins us next. This is Baseball Central in the home of the Blue Jays. Sportsnet 590, The Fan. All right, we're just a little more than half an hour away from first pitch tonight. Apparently my drive
Who
home.
Who are you?
Apparently my drive home is going to be.
Yeah, it's wrecks all over the place. I'm so happy. That's going to make me happy that you're miserable.
I might just have
Yeah, to. It does. I don't know why it does, but it really does.
No, it's just. I mean.
And you're going to be sitting in your car just thinking, seriously, who did I make mad up there?
I mean, and someone's going to say, why didn't you take the guy? I could have taken the GO train.
You could have.
But, I mean. I just, coming in at this time of day. It's been pretty good so far. I've lucked out, but today it appears as if the lunatics are out in the road. I just don't get it. I don't get it. It could be too many pickup trucks on the road. I might be falling into that category. Too many pickup trucks on the road. Too many. Here's the thing I don't get. And I understand this is aging myself, right? Mm-hmm. But when I was 25, give or take a few years, when I was 25, I used to sit back and think, you know what I'm going to do when I get a lot of money? And of course, I have not yet reached
right,
that.
Right.
But you know what I'm going to do when I get a lot of money? I'm going to buy me the fastest, smallest, sexiest, reddest car I can find, and you'll never see me. I'm just going to be, I just want my little fast sports car. Maybe not even a Maserati. They're not little. I want a little fast sports car that goes like pig, right? At no point did I sit there and say, you know, when I get older, I want to get me a pickup truck with, you know, wheels that are yay high and the ass of the truck up off the ground this high. And I want to get like runner boards so 7 people can stand on the side. And yeah, and I want to get like that. I want to have the hump on the truck so that I want to get me a big like Land Rover or something. I want to get me something big or a Humvee. I want to get me like a military grade thing that I can drive down the road. When did we change from wanting to go pew to wanting to go? You know?
No, I don't know.
All right, let's bring in Ben Wagner from the broadcast booth. He is our radio voice of the Blue Jays on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. How you doing, Ben? Ben, okay, I've got a choice. Are you going to have the smallest, fastest, reddest, sexiest car in the world? You can get a big-ass Humvee with chrome all over the place and whatever. What are you going for?
Give him a third option, a souped-up golf cart.
Or a souped-up golf cart. That's it. There you go.
And there it is.
There you go.
The first shot of the day has been fired.
There you go. That's it. I was going to ask you if you got your golf cart across the border or not.
If I could, I would.
I know you would. I know
you
would.
It would help out my, you know, 3-minute walking commute.
All right.
And 30 seconds.
Enough mirth.
Good luck with yours. Yeah. Good luck with yours, Chuck.
Yeah, thank you.
That's what I said.
Jesus.
It gives me great pleasure.
I might just sleep overnight
Stay
here.
Hot.
I might sleep overnight and eat all the free chips they got downstairs in the the commissary here.
Mm.
It wouldn't be the first time I slept here overnight, to be honest, but that's another story. It was involved tequila. Corey Dickerson in the lineup today. Barker and I were saying, we're looking at the bottom of the lineup. Been a while since you've had 3 lefty bats. You know, Brave Aguilera is a switch hitter, but 3 lefty bats in the bottom of the order. How do you think let's assume Corey Dickerson stays healthy and can contribute. And, you know, at some point, Kevin Biggio comes back. How do you think Corey Dickerson will be used by Charlie, let's say, September 9th? Everybody healthy and, and you're good to go. How do you think Corey Dickerson gets used?
I think he gets a chance to play. If that bat comes back, he's going to get a chance to play. This is such a right-handed hitting lineup that the Blue Jays are looking for some productivity and some consistency from the left side. And I asked Charlie today, can he fight himself into playing contention? He said he's going to get a lot of looks. So the Blue Jays easing him back in today, and I honestly thought that he was going to start in left field because that makes a better defensive lineup between facing Cleveland and also having Hyun-Jun Ryu on the mound. And usually we see the Blue Jays better defensive linemen in the outfield and on the diamond. So I thought maybe Corey Dickerson would get that call today in left field, but going to try to ease him back in with his DH spot. But I think Corey Dickerson gets a chance to play. And if he can become an option, Grichuk then goes to the bench against right-handers, and that left-handed bat jumps in there.
Okay, I can't believe I'm saying this after one inning, but where do you think Brad Hand pitches next? 7th, 8th, 9th, 6th?
6th.
Really? That far sixth. Down?
Well,
inning.
No, it's not one inning, but I think, you know, if you have it lined up where you've got Jordan Romano, you've got Simber. You've got all the other guys.
Yeah.
Hopefully, you know, this is a situation where if he is fighting through something right now, that can ease him back in, and it's not a high-pressure situation in the 7th, 8th, or 9th where this Blue Jays bullpen has had a lot of trouble this year. And hopefully if it is a situation where it is the 5th and maybe or a starter goes through 5 and you get to the 6th, that'd be a nice way to just get him back into the mix here. That's the balance for me. And the other thing is, too, you have to watch how Rafael Dolis and Ryan Borucki are going to be used, I think, in the next little while, too, because the Blue Jays don't have a long man. And ideally, that would fall onto the shoulders of Ryan Borucki. So if he goes a couple of innings because the starter goes short or it's a blowout, that then kind of shuffles around how the other guys are going to get used, too. I don't think that Rafael Dolis is going to be that guy that they're going to expect 2 innings from. But he's not going to be the guy, you know, that's going to only go out there and throw 14 pitches. I think they're going to lean on him for length. So, again, it's like the big picture. Where are the pieces and how do they fall? And that's why I think if you get Brad Hand at least a couple of outings in low-pressure situations, that's where you're going to find him next.
Do you think the old Ryu is back? And do you think he can make 28-ish starts?
I think he can make 28-ish starts.
You think so?
I think the old Ryu is back because that changeup has come back to life.
Yeah.
And that makes everything better. Everything. I know we get really wrapped up in watching velocity and a number of different metrics here, but the bottom line is that fastball looks different and his cutter is way more effective if he's got the changeup. And we have seen the reemergence of that changeup. And I asked Ryu yesterday on the field, I said, how have you been able to get it back? Was it an extra side session? Is it your flat groundwork? Have you been able to change something to refine it? He said, no, he has changed nothing. It's just come back and it feels better.
Why do you think that is? Do you think it's the ballparks he played in? You know, Buffalo, you miss because he throws 88. Dunedin, you miss. It's 88. Change up, you might start to aim it. Do you think that has a little something to do with it? Or he's just a little older. He's thrown a ton of them. And, tendency is that thing tends to go away.
I think it just tends to go away.
I think so?
It disappeared on him a little bit.
And, yeah.
I don't want to overblow this, but the baseball is different now. The way that the ball is rubbed up and given to a pitcher, it is different now. And for a touch-and-feel guy, and he is every bit of that with all of his pitches, let alone the cream of the crop here with that changeup, I think it just took a little bit of time for him to find the changeup, the grip, the release point. And he admitted, you know, mechanically there were a couple of things that he got away from. So I think it's all back in sync now, and I'm looking for the vintage Ryu to return into the rotation because he's making his debut here at Rogers Center.
You know, we had Ross on a little earlier, and we were talking about the, you know, sort of the narrative that's developed around this team when it comes to close and late. And, you know, we threw out the usual caveats. First of all, this is and Ross pointed this out, this is a right-hand hitting team. You're going to see a lot of hard-throwing right-handers. You know, I mean, you can take it further and go a guy like Emmanuel Clase, if you look at his numbers. It's not just the Blue Jays that have had trouble with him or with his velocity. But Ross made an interesting point about, you know, he didn't think it was velocity as much as command of the strike zone.
There you go.
By the hitters, right? And not expanding, and maybe, you know, as Barker pointed out, look, there's a lot of luck involved too. Randall Grichuk had more at bats close and late than anybody else in this team. It's probably not the guy you'd pick, right? If you could say, give me the guy I want up there close and late, probably not the guy you'd want. Vladdy, there are six guys between Vladdy and
Randall
and Randall. So there is an element of luck here, but what are you seeing, Ben, when it comes to those particular situations?
Well, it's decisions to swing at good pitches to hit. That's where it boils down. I mean, we went through in 2019, young lineup, even some of the veteran guys that were there, and I'm going back to, you know, guys that aren't nearly as good as what this team is right now, but they were letting fastballs go right down the middle. And they were not picking out the best pitch within it at bat. And you can go back in 18-19 with the Brandon Drurys, the Derek Fishers, all the guys, you know, that were on the fringes, and they wouldn't even sniff this Major League roster right now because it's a much different lineup. But that kind of plate discipline is where the Blue Jays need to be better. And late in ball games, they have to pick and not miss the pitch to hit in that situation too. And that's part of the problem with Kevin Biggio. The velocity is one thing, but also he's not expanding the zone perhaps when he should. If he's thinking about a particular pitch or a particular situation where he's looking for a pitch to drive and he gets beat in another spot, that's where it's boiled down. And he's not alone. You know, Rowdy Tellez, that was the albatross for Rowdy Tellez. It was pitch selection, plate discipline, and the Blue Jays look overmatched because it's twofold. Guys with upper velocity, sure, but it's also picking the right pitch to pull the trigger on.
Ben, run prevention's a big deal for the Blue Jays. Reuse on the mound. How come Santiago Espinal's not playing third?
I actually asked that question on the field earlier today to one of the coaches, and Brevik Valera is a combination of get a switch hitter into the lineup, somebody that has a little bit more versatility with the glove, but also is good enough with the glove to play at third base. Santiago Espinal is a young hitter still. You've got Zach Plesac, Dan's nephew, on the mound, and he's going to spin it a little bit. And they thought Brevik Valera, from either side of the plate, just has more control within the strike zone. And, yes, he's got more natural pop from the right side of the plate, but as a left-handed hitter, they're looking for production in the bottom of this lineup, and they thought it was the better matchup.
Yeah, you could just think the changeup working now out in front, weak contact to the pull side, Bo having his sometimes things at shortstop. Santi has been really good at third.
He's been tremendous. He was on display yesterday again.
Yeah.
I look at the plays on the backhand that he was making, playing in near the bag, back near the line as well, deep in third base, and he's got an average arm. And I was talking with Luis Rivera. I said, what makes the difference between a guy that has an average arm being a good third baseman to a guy that has a howitzer being a good third baseman? And it's the footwork that Santiago Espinal has. And he's now figured out, different than being at shortstop, he gets deeper. Mm-hmm. Watch him field on the backhand. He gets deeper. And it starts with the ankles, the knees, the hips all bending down, because then he can come up and he lets a better, stronger, more accurate throw go.
Nice.
Ben, we're going to let you scoot. Look forward to your call tonight, my friend. Thanks as always.
Thanks.
We'll see you in about 15 minutes, guys. Have a good one.
Absolutely. Ben Wagner, radio voice of the Blue Jays, 707 first pitch. And just watching the monitor here, Lourdes Gurriel Jr. can find enjoyment in the simplest of things. Like, what he's watching Bo Bichette wrap his bat handle right now with his arm around him. I mean, you'd swear to God they were like having maybe it is a deep intellectual discussion.
Yeah, yeah.
But Gurriel seems to have a lot of fun with just about everything.
Yeah, I think he's saying, you know, Plesac throws this. Now you do this. Don't do that. Try this with your bat. It's sort of neat watching them. They're that young. They're, you know, they're talking about numerous things.
Yeah, I'm sure Bo's saying, Don't worry about me.
Look at him stats.
It doesn't matter anyhow, because you know what I'm doing that first pitch anyhow. It doesn't matter what he's doing. I'm swinging as hard as I can. Yeah,
so you just see the flow.
Yeah, you know.
That's it.
Anyhow, we'll take a break and come back. Are we on our... Oh, we're out of fit. Okay, I'm sorry. I thought we had another break. I went on so long with that damn truck thing.
Yeah, you did.
That I forgot about.
Yeah.
Interesting hearing Ben talk about Brevik Valera.
Yeah, I don't know.
He's a guy. Look, he's a guy this organization has spent a great...
When all of these games matter, you got to be careful with who's on the mound, who's found his changeup. You know, rumblings are he's asked for Santi playing third because of that reason. He wants every ball that's hit that should be made, plays be made.
Mm-hmm.
And it just seems like you're asking that guy to do a whole lot, because he's going to get a lot of plays over there. He's going to get some balls hit to him, you know, that could be hard. And hopefully they're made for the Blue Jays' sake and for Ryu's sake. But I just don't know why. If it ain't broke, why fix it? It's that kind of thing. If you've earned the right to play and you're better than the other guy, switch his. Is he any good at it? That's the question. It's crunch time. You got 36 wins to get to 90.
Yeah,
okay?
But I got to say, that's what I'm saying. But I got to say, I have to say this too. Again,
there's a reason this organization has worked so hard to keep him. They've worked so hard to get him. I mean, they've carried him through a whole bunch of stuff. Clearly, there's a thought that he can help him. Hey, a switch hitting infielder.
Well, you got a really good option, work. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
Like, it's, you know, these games,
let me ask you this,
these games are a big deal.
Okay, let me ask you this, Bart. Let me ask you this.
All right.
Say it does work.
Well.
Say he's a better defender than Kevin Biggio. Wouldn't you rather find out now if he's a better defender than Kevin Biggio and a switch hitter?
Well, you just went out and gave up two pretty good prospects thinking you can make a run at this thing the last 60 games. Not sure it's time to be figuring out if guys can play third with a guy up that's left-handed that's found his changeup. I don't know about that. We'll see.
If he is going to contribute to this team, he's going to have to hit. Going to have to hit guys like Zach Plesac. Like, I don't know.
I don't think for me it's more about his hitting. So I disagree a little bit with Ben. The bottom of the order for me is more about defense. I know you turn the lineup over, you get the big boys up with a couple of guys on. I get it. That helps.
You know, we haven't.
But it's more about defense.
We haven't seen this guy play enough. It's entirely possible that he's decent defensively.
Maybe.
Although I will say.
Santiago Espinal's earned the right, don't you think?
Well, yeah.
To play right now. I'm not saying next year or – you're talking about right now. This is a small sample size.
We talked about this.
Does he make the plays he's supposed to make? Yes, he does.
I made the point earlier today. And I don't know. I Marcus Semien's a fine infielder. He's a great infielder, all that good stuff. Right now, though, two out in the ninth inning, I want the last ball of the game hit to Santiago Espinal. Even more than Bichette, even more than Semien.
Mm.
And, I mean, if you want to roll it down to first base, Vladdy, that's fine. But
you say roll it?
Roll it down first base. No, you know what I mean. But
you said roll it. That's different.
Of the infielders on that other side of the infield, I would rather have Santiago Espinal making the throw and have it be me.
You made me think about it, and that means they're better than decent. Marcus Semien, I'm okay. The ball's hit to Marcus. I think I can turn away, and he's out. Santiago Espinal the same way. I think you got the corner, you know, up the middle a little bit. Bo's still a work in progress.
Yeah.
Footwork and where he wants to catch the ball, momentum towards his target, accuracy, all of those things. You know, the big arm wheel rotation in his arm, it's a little bit too long, those kind of things. It's all a work in progress. So, yeah, it's just they're trying to find, I guess, as many good defenders as they possibly can get. I don't know. Isn't it a little late to figure out if a guy can play third with Ryu on the mound?
Just looking at Santiago Espinal's numbers since the start of June.
There
373,
you go.
Four doubles, two homers, seven ribbies.
That's a plus for me. It's the way he plays defense because of who's playing short and the things he's still trying to figure out and how hard it is to play short every day. You need a good third baseman. And he sort of maybe a little eliminated Kevin.
Charlie made this point the other day about still my third baseman. I don't
know. Yeah, I know what he said, but.
Yeah, I do too. And I get the sentiment, and I'm good on Charlie for saying that. But
with Ray pitching, who was playing third?
Yeah.
Not Kevin Biggio.
Yeah.
Action, speed, louder, and words, Jeff.
Who was third on Sunday?
What's today?
With Barrios pitching.
Might have been Kevin.
I wonder if it was. I'm going to look right here. Da-da-da. Santiago Espinal.
There you go.
All right. Well,
a sinker ball guy out in front.
This is the Blue Jays lineup. 7:07 is the first pitch. George Springer leading off. Vladdy Jr.'s at first. Marcus Semien, that would have been interesting. Marcus Semien's at second. Bo Bichette's at short. Teoscar Hernandez is in right field. Corey Dickerson is DHing. Lourdes Gurriel Jr. in left. Breivik Valera, we talked about this at third base. Reese McGuire behind the plate. Hyunjin Ryu on the mound. They will take on Zach Plesac. What do you expect to see from Ryu tonight as we wrap
one through
this up?
Five in that order, get a lot of hits, score a lot of runs.
So you don't really care about Ryu.
Ryu's going to do his thing. He's got arm speed back, and the velocity's not a big deal. I don't know about the fastball and the righties. I think he's went away from that a little bit. Maybe it's on purpose, and the arm speed and the location on the changeup, and he can throw it in any count, and he's got a lot of confidence in it. But I'm going to tell you right now, one through five, let's see it.
Finally, Hyunjin Ryu makes his Toronto debut in a Blue Jays uniform at the Rogers Centre. First pitch is 7:07. Thank you so much for joining Barker and myself. We will be back tomorrow again from 5 to 7. Have a great night. Enjoy the baseball.